Now it's my great honor to introduce Chris Dunn, who is the principal of Acidotic Racing. We'll talk a little bit about Acidotic Racing, and some of my following will remember we had Chris on a couple times, once before the Loon Mountain Race and once before the Cranmore Mountain Race. This is more, we can talk a little bit about those races as well, but today's show is more on training and success stories in training, coaching, and Chris's professional background. So, Chris, thank you for joining me on still another Friday afternoon.
Hey, hello, Tom. How are you?
Fantastic. Because I'm talking to you, so I feel like vicariously I'll be able to run up a mountain tonight or tomorrow. But again, hopefully we'll generate some calls. My number is 866-823-1077. So you're the principal of Acidotic Racing, but you're a lot more than that. So tell us more of your, we have this whole hour, so please feel free to take your time. And what's your professional background? How did you and why did you start Acidotic Racing? And what's your athletic background, et cetera?
Yeah, well, again, thanks for having me on this afternoon, Tom. It's always a pleasure to get to chat with you. You know, I think that the majority of folks, runners in New England, know of me as the race director for one or more of their favorite mountain or trail races. That's typically how most people who know of me know me as. But the reality is that while I am a professional race director, that really constitutes a fairly small percentage of my general background and sort of my professional experience too. So professionally, I am a clinical exercise physiologist. I work at a healthcare institution in Maine doing principally cardiac and pulmonary rehab. So I've been in the clinical aspect of exercise and exercise prescription for the better part of the last 24, 25 years. So professionally, I am a clinical exercise physiologist. I'm a race director by avocation and passion. But really what pays the bills for me, so to speak, is my professional career as a clinical exercise physiologist. But during the last 25 years or so, I have from time to time taken on athletic clients, folks that have reached out to me to help them meet and achieve, athletes asking me for their help, for my help in helping them to reach and or exceed their athletic goals. So I've dabbled in that the better part of the last 25 years, but really in a more organized manner over the last year and a half, I've created this coaching business on the side too, and that's you know kind of what I wanted to talk a little bit about today. It's just sort of some of the aspects of what coaching is all about and what people can get out of it and some things like that.
Well, let's start with one basic thing. So I'm sure you've already stimulated some thoughts in people's minds. So if I'm a younger or older athlete that weekend warrior trying to get back in shape, how do I get in touch with you and what is your training philosophy?
Yeah, sure. So the easiest way to get in touch with me probably is by email. The email address that I use for Acidotic Racing is a good way for folks to contact me. That's contact@acidoticracing.com. So contact@acidoticracing.com is an email that I check periodically. And that's a good way at least to sort of make that initial contact or touch point with folks. To begin to make some inquiry as to what my coaching services are all about. It's also the general Acidotic Racing email address too. So if folks have questions about some of the events that we've got going on, that's another good way to get in touch with me. As far as philosophy goes, I'm glad that you asked that because I think that's a really important aspect and element when folks are looking for coaches to help, you know, with their training and racing. I think it's important that people find someone whose philosophies most closely match theirs, because there are as many philosophies on training athletes as there are coaches, and we all have a little bit different way of doing things. For the most part, for me, what I try to do is I try to match a training program to the needs and the preferences and the logistics of an athlete's personal and professional and family life. The reality is that there are very few athletes who would be considered professional athletes for whom training and racing is their only job. For the rest of us, you and me both, we have other obligations, be them professional obligations or family obligations. And so while, you know, while we do enjoy expressing this athletic output of ours, we have to fit our training and racing into the context of the rest of our lives. So my philosophy is to fit a training program to the athlete's life, rather than trying to get an athlete to fit their life to a training program.
So would you, if I express interest in hooking up with you, Chris, from a training perspective, you might interview me to figure out my crazy work schedule or whatever, and say, you know, this is how it might work. How would you go about figuring out what works for the client?
Right. So, you know, to sort of break it down, I think that that first of all, it's important for a coach to understand what is the athlete's wish and desire relative to their athletic pursuits, right? So is it to PR in a particular 10K road race? Is it to qualify for the Boston Marathon? Is it to finish in the top three in an age group at a mountain race? So the first thing is to identify what the athlete's goals are. I mean, what is their motivation to hire a coach? Typically, athletes are interested in hiring coaches for their help to get them to achieve above and beyond the level that they're currently at, right? To sort of help propel them forward in terms of personal bests or qualifying for a particular event or race. Once that athlete's individual goals are established, that is, what do they want to get out of the coaching? Then for me, it's just what you described. So, you know, I'd be Tom, tell me about your work schedule. What days could you train? And how much time can you set aside to train? Once we both come to an understanding of how much availability you have to dedicate to a training program, then I can get busy designing a training program that will work within the context of your life and also help you to move toward achieving those goals.
If you want to talk to Chris, it's 866-823-1077. That's 866-823-1077. And offline, if you want to talk to Chris, contact at acidoticracing.com. So tell us, I'm sure over these many years, you've had some success stories. And of course, without necessarily naming names, can you give us an example where your coaching was extremely helpful? And I mean, I always say everybody could use a coach, and you just have to kind of make that commitment and know that I think that sometimes my experience in Northern New England is sometimes we have that Yankee mentality, or I should be able to do this without a coach. But all of us need a coach, whether it's a business coach, a fitness coach, a life coach. So tell us some of one or two of your success stories.
Sure. Yeah, I'm happy to do that. I'm immensely proud of all the athletes that I coach. Just thinking back a few months ago to June, with the Mount Washington Road Race presented by Delta Dental, Northeast Delta Dental, I had a number of athletes that were there racing the Mount Washington Road Race, for whom, for 5 or 6 weeks, 7 weeks leading up to that race, they were engaged in very specific training programs, and each slightly unique to their own particular preferences. But their training programs were designed for them either to PR on the rock pile or as a first experience at the rock pile. So I think I had 6 or 7 athletes who were racing at the Mount Washington Road Race, and every one of them met or exceeded their goal in terms of what they wanted to get out of the experience, whether it was a first timer who just wanted to get to the top of the mountain, or it was an athlete like Kim Netto, my teammate and my client, whose objective was to finish in the top three. As you recall, Kim Netto from Leverett, Massachusetts, an Asadotic Racing member, finished 2nd overall at the Mount Washington Road Race. But her success story it mirrors and parallels some of the successes from some of the other folks that I helped to prepare too. So that day, I was immensely proud of all the athletes that I had an opportunity to help leading up to that race, and the after contact that I had when I finally got back down to the mountain, and the quick review that I had with each of them about how it went. It's so incredibly rewarding to see people happy and smiling and proud of their own accomplishment, particularly at that race. As you know, the Mount Washington Road Race is one of the greatest road racing challenges in all of New England. So
definitely grueling, and Chris used some terms, rock pile. That is obviously you're running up the Mount Washington. You're actually running up the auto roll, and there's no auto road. There's no give to it. I think that's what Chris is alluding to. I'll talk a little bit later about the Loon and Cranmore races, but you're basically going straight up for 7.6 miles. And Chris also used a couple terms, PR and PB, personal record or personal best. I think the running community listening to this knows that, but if you're not a runner. So that must make, so sort of closing the loop on that, when you have a client, a colleague, a member of the Asadotic Racing that certainly meets their goal, that must put a big smile on your face.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that's where the satisfaction of coaching, that's where the payoff comes, so to speak, sort of the emotional payoff for a coach is being able to aid and assist your athlete in reaching or exceeding their goals and expectations. There isn't anything that's any more rewarding than that. And that's what really drives and motivates me is helping people experience that level of personal success. And again, it may be as simple as just a personal best at an event, or simply finishing an event. For some athletes, finishing an event like the Mount Washington Road Race can be extremely gratifying for that particular athlete. Those are the moments that I cherish the most as it relates to being able to work personally with these athletes and clients.
Now, we've mentioned Asadotic Racing a couple times. If I'm a runner and committed to training and running, how do you become a member of the Asadotic Racing team?
Yeah, with Asadotic Racing, we're always looking to add great people to our endurance racing community. Our community is about 150 athletes spread out throughout New England, and there's no prerequisite. There are no requirements. It's funny because I get email inquiries quite often from folks. Asking about how do they become an Asadotic Racing member, and are there requirements? And it's always interesting to me when folks need or feel like they need to justify their athletic ability, thinking that is some sort of requirement for membership in the community, and that there isn't anything that can be further from the truth. We have athletes that represent the front of the field, the middle of the pack, and all the way at the back of the pack. And We're not an elite racing group, although we do have elite athletes in our midst. What we are is a community of like-minded endurance athletes who share some really important values. The involvement in our communities, the charitable giving aspect that so much of us are so fortunate in what we have to be able to use those good fortunes to give back to folks who may not have it, might not have as much as we do. And then the competition part, right? That we all enjoy that aspect of competition. That competition gives our training some meaning and purpose. So community, charity, competition, those are the three pillars that we all hold very near and dear. It's really as simple, Tom, as people just reaching out to me and expressing interest in becoming a member.
And that would be contact@askthedocracing.com. Give us the genesis. Yeah. You've explained this to me, but it might be informative for the listening audience. The genesis behind the word acidotic and what it means. And then after commercial break, we'll get into the social outreach, the philanthropic angle as well.
Yeah, so, acidotic is a physiologic term. As an exercise physiologist, I'm science-based. Science is the stuff that really interests me. Acidotic is this physiologic term that describes what happens in the body when we push ourselves to our physical limit. Our body chemistry changes. Our body chemistry becomes more acidic. That physical change related to that maximal effort is called acidosis. When we are acidotic physiologically, our body chemistry is changed because of this all-out maximal exertion. Well, to apply that all-out mentality to not only just our racing, but if we think about giving nothing less than everything we have in everything that we do, whether that's in our personal lives or our professional lives or in our athletic pursuits, that's sort of the spirit of acidotic racing. That we are all committed to doing everything we can in our communities, to doing everything we can to support the charities that are nearest and dearest to our hearts. And then finally, when we get into that athletic arena, to give nothing less than everything we have. And it doesn't really matter where we finish. We always say what matters most is how we finish. You know, Tom, I can think of the Merrimack River Trail Race. And I can think back this very vivid image of how you finished the Merrimack River Trail Race, and I would say that the way you finished the Merrimack River Trail Race is really the spirit and definition of acidotic racing. I'll let you ask.
No, that's too funny. Well, basically, that was one of my. It was a very challenging trail race, and our good pal Ryan Kelly, who of course. Runs out of Concord, and it's great, obviously elite. I'm nowhere near in his league, but of course, anytime I'm running in this same race as him, he always looks, after he finishes, he comes back and gets me. So he insisted that I sprint the last 100 yards, which was on like a little shallow pond, but what I didn't know was there were branches and stuff under, so I'm sprinting through the water and do a literally a face plant, so I come out of there. I love acidotic because I'm nowhere near anybody's elite league, but I always feel like at the end if I haven't given my all, if I don't feel like I have to throw up, I haven't done it. Anyway, so on that particular time, I also did a face plant and came out, kept on running, had a really good time. And that was, and from there, the rest is history. Did Loon Cranmore, I've been doing Mount Washington for a while, but so acidotic, that word has a lot of meaning to me. So please stay tuned with me and Chris Dunn. And if you want to talk to Chris directly, the number is 866-823-1077. Please stay tuned after commercial break. Welcome back to Ken Kale and Company. Tom Raffio sitting in for Ken Kale. If you want to reach me or Chris Dunn, the number is 1-866-823-1077. That's 866-823-1077. WTPLFM.com is powered by the Grand State Dairy Promotion. The weather is this. It's 88 degrees in Concord, 7 degrees cooler in Laconia at 81 degrees, and 86 degrees in Manchester. That weather report is sponsored by R&T Electric. Since 1972, your home for all of your electric and generator needs. And with me is Chris Dunn, who is a trainer, who is the principal of Acidotic Racing, amongst many other things. He described his background in the first segment here. So, Chris, we were talking about your philosophies and your success stories. So I do want to get back to the Loon and Cranmore races, because I had such a great time at those races. But what is your specific athletic background? And were you a runner? Did you play the traditional sports or all of the above?
Yeah, I started in athletics in high school, and like most, started with team sports. So I played all the traditional team sports, football in the fall, basketball in the winter, and then baseball in the spring. Played those sports from youth all the way up through high school. After high school, went off to college, and I think like many former team sport athletes whose team sport experience ends at the end of high school, I was not talented enough in any of those team sports to play them competitively in college. So my athletic, at least my team athletic career, if you will, or experience really ended when high school ended. And I, for the next year or two after high school, my first few years at the University of New Hampshire, I struggled with my weight. I probably put 50 pounds on, not exercising, not eating the right things, drinking the wrong things. And I didn't feel real good about myself. This was in the early 90s, and so I felt like I needed to get sort of back in the game, so to speak. So I did a little bit of searching around, and you can understand, and of course you can recall this, that in the early 90s, that was before the advent of the internet. And so you had to go to magazines, or you had to go to the library and look in books. I found this sport called triathlon in the very early 90s. And it wasn't a terribly new sport, but it was new to me. And I got into it, and I started using triathlon as a way to, and training for triathlon as a way to get in shape and to lose a little weight, quite frankly. Over the next year or two, with during the time that I was at the University of New Hampshire, and being a student, you have quite a bit of free time to dedicate to training when you're not in class. And so when I wasn't in class, I was either swimming in the pool or riding my bike, or I was running around the neighborhood. Over those 2 years, I actually lost close to 50 pounds and was racing sprint distance or Olympic distance triathlon. And so for me, it was a great way to get reacquainted with athletics and to sort of redevelop this love for physical activity and training. From there, with triathlon is such a difficult sport to remain competitive in, because it's very equipment sensitive, and that, you know, there's always a more expensive bike to buy. There's always a faster bike to buy. You know, as you know, Tom, with running, as long as you kind of continue to have good footwear, you know, footwear and running doesn't necessarily make a whole lot of performance difference from one athlete to another, right? It isn't necessarily the athlete that has the most expensive pair of shoes that's going to win the race.
Well, of course, and the best story of that, of course, a few years ago when the woman runner who won the Mount Washington, the Ned Northeast of the Mount Washington Road Race, I hear right before, you remember this, but about 5 minutes before the race started.
I remember Andy Shackett making the announcement.
Right, we hear her name being called, and come to find out, she inadvertently, for those of you that don't know, what you do is you have people that will drive you back down the mountain. So there's drivers, et cetera, because you can only have about 1,200 people in the race. But anyway, so she had given her sneakers inadvertently to a driver, so her sneakers were at the top of the mountain, and she needed to run in sneakers. So she used a borrowed pair of sneakers and won the race. So I agree with you in running. If you have what I always say, if you have a pair of sneakers, shorts, and an ab wheel, you can stay in shape inexpensively,
sure, yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, it's not. But it's not that way with triathlon. I was beginning with a new family and a young family to support. And anyway, I just didn't have the resources to continue in triathlon. But I did continue in running, and so I started road racing. And I road raced for 5 or 10 years until I discovered trail racing. And from trail racing, I discovered snowshoe racing. And from snowshoe racing, I discovered mountain racing. And so I made the shift from pavement and asphalt to trails and snow and mountains. And I loved trail running and snowshoe racing and mountain racing. And I had the good fortune and health to race nearly every distance in running and on nearly every surface imaginable. A few years ago, I had some knee pain that I just couldn't shake. Took some time off from running. My knee really wasn't getting any better. I ended up being diagnosed with osteoarthritis in my right knee. And at 47 years old, my orthopedic guy told me I had the right knee of an 80-year-old mogul skier. As a way to continue with some sort of physically active lifestyle, I made the very difficult decision about 2 years ago to stop running competitively. While I can run a little bit without pain, I can't run enough to stay competitive with the folks who I'm used to racing with. Not only that, because osteoarthritis is a degenerative thing, the more that I pound on that knee, the greater the chance that I'm going to have that knee replaced sooner rather than later. So it was a very difficult decision to make, but I made the conscious decision to stop competitive running. The good news for me, though, Tom, is that I've been a competitive cyclist for the better part of the last 20 or 25 years. So it wasn't difficult for me to make the switch from competitive running to competitive cycling, and so now my athletic outlet is mountain bike racing and in the summertime, spring and summertime, and cyclocross racing in the fall. So I spend the majority of time on the myriad of bikes that I have hanging in my basement.
Now, you mentioned snowshoe racing. I know that that's popular here. Obviously, last winter was difficult and challenging because of the lack of snow, and I know a number of races were canceled, but I know a lot of my running friends do the snowshoe circuit really to keep their cardio up. So tell us a little bit about that circuit, and then I do want to circle back and talk about Loon and Cranmore this year.
We're really fortunate here in New Hampshire that there is a very vibrant snowshoe racing scene. And that includes a number of snowshoe races here in New Hampshire, but it also includes a community of athletes. And what's interesting is that when you go to a number of snowshoe races, well, actually the first snowshoe race that you go to, you realize that particularly if you're in the trail running or mountain running community scene, you go to a snowshoe race and you almost right away recognize people, because for the most part, snowshoe racers are trail racers or mountain racers whose trails and mountains are covered with snow in the wintertime. So snowshoe racing is their winter outlet. So it's very much the same community of people that we see in the trail and mountain circuit. We see them in the wintertime on the snow. So there's a series of snowshoe races in New Hampshire that I oversee called the Granite State Snowshoe Series. There is a website, granitestatesnowshoeseries.org, That website is not quite updated yet for the 2017 schedule, believe it or not. And it's funny because the race directors, the other race directors in the circuit, I'm sure they roll their eyes when they get an email from me in the middle of July asking them to begin to secure their snowshoe racing dates for the winter of 2017. But I like to get on these things early so that we can release the 2017 Granite State Snowshoe Series schedule by November 1st. That's always our objective. And so we have somewhere, it depends on the wintertime, somewhere between 6 and 8 races right here in New Hampshire. I mean, there are snowshoe races all over New England, but if you live in New Hampshire and you enjoy trail running and mountain running, there is going to be a snowshoe race somewhere in New Hampshire, generally speaking, from the second week in January right through the first week in March.
Well, I like the fact that you prepare, because preparation, one of the keys, and of course, you talked about the hard work earlier as well. So for the next commercial break, let's circle back now to, I really got into Loon and Cranmore this year. I never realized how fun running up like a double black diamond could be.
Right.
And I find as I get older that I'm actually enjoying more of these sort of longer runs and up mountains as contrasted with, you know, 5K sprints, if you will. And of course, I do a ton of those as well. But I just find like where I'm at now, sort of the slower, persevering ones are better for me. So I really enjoyed it. Obviously, I'm nowhere near elite, but it was so fun. And you did it such a your team did such a great job in those races. So tell us a little bit about, as you look back at Loon and Cranmore, all the good things that happened there, and would you, and next year should we expect the same, or are you going to change anything up?
It's really been a great year of mountain racing. You know, starting early this spring with the Sleepy Hollow trail race in Vermont that Casey Enman puts on. You know, these mountain races that you're speaking of are part of the USATF New England Mountain Circuit. There are a series of 8 races in the circuit, and if anyone is interested in more information about the mountain races that Tom is talking about, there is a website, USATFNE.org/trail. USATFNE.org/trail. That describes the USATF New England Mountain Circuit and the races that are in that circuit. And you know what's interesting, Tom, is that I don't think enough people know that that there is a way to get around the Mount Washington Road Race lottery. You know, for many people, you know, Mount Washington really is the most prestigious, the largest, the greatest challenge in road racing here in New England is the Mount Washington Road Race. And as you're very keenly aware, there's a lottery because they have to limit the number of participants. And I know from my own personal experience, I struck out in the lottery 2 times. And so, you know, it can be frustrating for a regional runner who really wants to do the Mount Washington Road Race, you know, for their fate, if you will, to be determined by a lottery. There is a way to get around the lottery, and that's for any runner who does 6 of the 8 races in the USATF Mountain Circuit. If you do 6 of the 8 races, that's what's called becoming a mountain goat.
So we'll, after commercial break, we'll get into that. And since sure. You mentioned the Northeast Delta and the Mount Washington Road Race, and our partners at the Auto Road don't even know I've committed this, but I'm just happy to report to the listening audience that just yesterday we've decided to continue our sponsorship for the next 3 years for the Northeast Delta Dental Mount Washington Road Race. It's been such a great experience for us. We'll talk about that and rejoin Chris Dunn after commercial break. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Ken Kale and Company. Tom Raffio sitting in for Ken Kale this Friday, August 19th. Our number is 1-866-823-1077. That's 866-823-1077. WTPLFM.com is powered by the Grand State Dairy Promotion. Mealtime is milk time. And with me is Chris Dunn, who who is a coach, trainer, jack of all trades, master of many, though, including the principal for Acidotic Racing. And we were talking, Chris, right before the break about the Mountain Series, and if you complete 6 out of 8, you get a pass into the urn, if you will, into the Northeast Delta Dental Mount Washington Road Race. And I just, again, want to mention to the listening audience, we just agreed to continue on with another a 3-year relationship, and I just find that every year it gets more and more exciting. We've managed to keep the traditional parts of the race intact, while also this year there was actually chip timing, so it was interesting. But anyway, so Chris, doing 6 out of 8. So upcoming, we still have like Bretton Woods, and what else do we have? And then we'll get into final thoughts on your training philosophy and benefits of hiring a coach.
There are 2 races left in the USATF New England Mountain Circuit. The Mount Greylock Road Race is on September 4th. It's actually one of the oldest mountain races in New England. I believe it was originally part of the series years and years ago, and then was absent from the series for many, many years, but it was reintroduced to the series last year. It remained in the series again this year. So the Mount Greylock Road Race, that's an auto road as well. I've never done it. I have clients and teammates that have done it, but it's an auto road race. I forget off the top of my head what the distance is, but that's September 4th, and that's an uphill-only race too. You know, I think for some folks there's considerations in terms of racing downhill. Some folks don't prefer to race downhill as well. Some just prefer the uphill races only, like the Mount Washington Road Race. Mount Greylock is up only. And then on October 4th, as you mentioned, is our Bretton Woods Fell Race. There'll be two courses, a short course, about 4.6 miles. You'll climb up the mountain and back down the mountain one time, so one loop on the mountain, about 4.6 miles. That's a marked course. That's called the short course. And then there's a long course. We're going to have to make an alteration to one of the checkpoints. Those details will be released pretty soon, but that long course will be probably around 8 miles, 8.5 miles, with close to 3,600 feet of gain, and probably multiple trips up and down the mountain, with the first 3 checkpoints on a marked course. But then the final 3 checkpoints, you're going to have to navigate from checkpoint to checkpoint on your own. There will be no course markings. That's the spirit of fell racing. It's a traditionally European sport, very popular fall European sport, in which checkpoints are laid out over the English countryside, and you sometimes with a map and compass, although that won't be necessary at Bretton Woods, but you navigate, if you will, from one checkpoint to the next. Checkpoints may be a few kilometers apart from each other.
That'll be my incentive to stay up with someone, because I'm always directionally challenged. So I'm going to do the long course. The other thing, as far as you mentioned going down, because I really enjoyed the uphill climb in Loon and Cranmore, but I noted some of the very same people that I passed going uphill were scampering down, and I was kind of navigating my way down. But anyway, looking forward to that. And again, if you want to contact Chris, it's at contact@acidarcracing.com. So as we close, quickly give us your how to get in touch with you if I'm interested in hiring you as a coach, and 30 seconds on your training philosophy.
Sure. So, and I think it's important to note that I have athletes that are both cyclists and runners as well. And generally speaking, my specialty is off-road pursuits. But I do have athletes that are both runners and cyclists. And my approach is to fit a training program to your life rather than dictating that you change your life to fit my training program.
Perfect. Customer-driven. Thank you, Chris Dunn. And again, if you're interested in contacting Chris, please contact contact@acidoticracing.com. Chris, thanks again for joining me on Still Another Friday Afternoon, and I'll see you at Greylock and Bretton Woods.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.
Take care. Please stay tuned after news and commercial.